Ralph Schoenman was Secretary General of the International Tribunal on U.S. War Crimes in Indochina, spent 7 months in Bolivia in 1967, was in prison there after the death of Che Guevara. He worked with Malcolm X with respect to the battle for the Congo in that anti-imperialist struggle in Eastern, Central, and Southern Africa, negotiated the release of political prisoners. He met Malcolm X when they both were in London and was arrested in Bolivia for being in regular contact with Che during Che's struggle to assist revolutionaries in the Andean country. He was a member in the 70s of the Who Killed Kennedy Committee and is currently, as most of you know, along with his wife Maya Schoen, produces Taking Aim on WBAI. A freedom fighter, a revolutionary in heart and mind, Ralph Schoenman.
So good to be with you, brothers and sisters, and thank you very much for coming out. We are here on the fifth anniversary of an ongoing and continuous war, a class war against the people of this country. Some 5 years ago, shortly after the events of 9/11, I began a series of broadcasts. It was a seven-part broadcast on WBAI called World Trade Center Uncensored History. Maya and I followed that with the smoking guns of 9/11, 9/11 false flag operation, 9/11 in the capitalist state, the underlying politics of 9/11. We've been part, all of us together, in a process of documenting, unfolding, and exposing and delineating the nature of this ongoing war against our own people, for that's what it is. What we're addressing here is treason at the top. Now, if you look at every attempt on the part of the established media to address the issues that we seek to elucidate, they label these, quote, conspiracy theories, unquote. Well, brothers and sisters, the most frequently invoked juridical category at every level of prosecution in this country, be it city, county, state, or federal, is that of conspiracy. Every prosecutor, every district attorney, conspiracy to defraud, conspiracy to take property, insider trading conspiracy. It's the arsenal with which they always go into battle, and frequently without a scintilla of evidence at their disposal. The only conspiracy in which they have vanishing little interest is that of the crimes of our rulers. Yeah. It's a label with which to dismiss things without having to think about it. But look, we don't have to go far to understand how power is structured in the United States. The New York Times has disclosed but recently that 1% of our people own more than 95% of the rest of us combined. The former president of Avis and American Express, who I like to cite, Robert Townsend, in his book Up the Organization, calculates that approximately 5,000 people, averaging some 14 corporate directorships per person, have control over what he calls the commanding heights of the United States economy. They fund both political parties. You know, in the recent election, the main fundraiser for George Bush was the president of Citibank, and the main fundraiser for Mr. Kerry was the vice president of Citibank. As Townsend describes it, they treat this country as their own personal whorehouse, and they consider each president their own private towel boy. This is a structure of power whose identity is not mysterious. And although it is true that history is not driven by conspiracy, it is equally true that our rulers, perforce, conduct their affairs in a conspiratorial manner, and they always have. Every major imperial adventure has proceeded on the basis of such false flag operations and pretexts, every one. Be it remember the Maine when they blew up their own ship in Havana Harbor, for a long-established plan to seize Cuba and the Philippines. be it the sinking of the Lusitania or the new Pearl Harbor that they speak of now, but the original one, 6 months in advance, they had all of the parameters of that undertaking. The Gulf of Tonkin, we have adumbrated these. This is but the little continuation of an established policy, of a necessary formula for whipsawing our population into a numbed acquiescence in long-established plans. Yes, it is treason at the top, and it is a form of class war. Yesterday, brothers and sisters, the United States Senate unanimously voted $68 billion additional dollars to prosecute this genocidal war in Iraq. And but recently in The Guardian in London, August 8th, Dan Plesch, United States forces prepared to destroy 10,000 targets in the Middle East in a few hours. Regardless of any impending ceasefire, they're speaking of Lebanon, the removal of Hezbollah or Iranian nuclear positions, the United States forces are prepared to destroy 10,000 targets in a few hours. And the article details that this operational plan is in motion. Let me point out to you that in the Armed Forces Journal in June 2006, Colonel Ralph Peters published a piece. It was his second major such undertaking, a previous one in 1997. It is called Blood Borders, How a New and Better Middle East Will Look. It's an operational plan, maps included. They're going to redraw the map of the Middle East and of Central Asia, seize its resources for months and indeed for years. They were calculating $4 to $5 trillion of short-term profit. Indeed, every administration in the United States since 1964 has had these plans for direct seizure of oil and for the decomposition of each state in the Arab East into its ethnic and religious components. Here is how it was described in the Pentagon. Without intervention, and this is 1975, we will face an economic and political disaster bearing more than a superficial resemblance to that of the 1930s. Indeed, in the Pentagon report of that time, they described what they called the Arab shoreline of the Gulf as a new El Dorado awaiting its conquistador. Every administration. Jimmy Carter, 1977, secret presidential directive, PD-18, preparing for a force for rapid intervention to seize the oil-producing areas of the region. 1978, June 4th, Admiral Thomas Moore, chairperson of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, deployment of forces to the East African and Arabian Sea for direct seizure of resources there. The Brookings Institution documents between 1946 and 1975, an average of 7 military interventions per week, 215 times. This is not a matter of some particular administration. It is not Mortimer Snerd, brothers and sisters. It is not the Bushmen. They are an integral part of this. This is an ongoing process. Indeed, as we are well aware, in the antecedent time prior to 9/11, virtually every intelligence agency had a full and developed documentation of what would unfold. Frankfurt Allgemeine Zeitung in Germany, German intelligence had elaborated the attacks on the buildings. French intelligence, Israeli intelligence, the Mossad was in meetings with the National Security Council, 200 operatives, by the way, across the South, focused 60 of them in Hollywood, Florida, where they were not just monitoring, but were in contact with the putative hijackers, namely Mohammed Atta and Al-Ghamdi and Al-Shehi and Mohammed Atta, according to night-ridden newspapers and the Washington Post and Newsweek, were where? Working at Maxwell Air Force Base in Alabama, Brooks Air Force Base in Texas, their contact address, the Pensacola Naval Station in Florida, at the Defense Language Institute in Monterey. Overwhelmingly, every documentation that we can find in the mainstream media established the hands of intelligence in relation to these events. William Safire in the New York Times, reacting to the fact that Bush had done a disappearing act after the attack and then showed up in Shreveport, Louisiana, and then is found at Nebraska at a secure Air Force base, not in Washington. He wrote a piece, it's instructive, it's in the New York Times at the time, called Inside the Bunker. Safire, who's hardly in the forefront of revolution, was put off by the cover story or the explanation that had been given to him that the Secret Service had stated that they had a warning from the terrorists that they received on Air Force One. Quote, Air Force One is next. And here's what Safire wrote. The worrisome thing of this has to do with the credibility of the Air Force One is next message. How did they get the code word information, the transponder know-how? How did they establish their malafides, their knowledge of the code words, of the presidential whereabouts, of the possession of secret procedures? It indicates that these terrorists have a mole in the White House. They have informants and contacts, he writes, in the Secret Service, the FBI, the FAA, and the CIA. What we need, he said, is an Angleton-type counter-spy to smoke out those in the central areas of authority who have the knowledge and the contacts and the communications to affect these events. The mainstream media. Do you remember that the former editor of Newsweek and the editor of the Washington Times, Arnold de Borsgrave, conducted an extraordinary interview with General Gul Hamid? General Gul Hamid was the head of the Inter-Service Intelligence Agencies of Pakistan, the ISI. It was General Gul Hamid's desk to coordinate the terror apparatus of Gulbuddin Hekmat Yar and Osama bin Laden in Afghanistan, for which $6 billion had been allocated by the Central Intelligence Agency. It was General Hamid's desk to create the conditions for the Taliban in Afghanistan on behalf of the United States authorities. This is what he said to Arnold de Borsgrave in an exclusive interview with United Press International. It is clear there's a plot by the United States Air Force. The Twin Towers were first attacked at 8:45 a.m., four flights were diverted from their assigned airspace, yet Air Force jets did not scramble as standard procedure until 10 a.m. Oh, yes, this is an undertaking of the Air Force. Radars are jammed, transponders fail, no IFF, friend or foe communication. This is an inside job. He said, you trained me. You guys trained me. He said, I know these operations. He said, who do you think this is? This is going to be hushed up in an investigation, just like the Warren Report after the Kennedy assassination, Gul Hamid states. Huh? He says, let's be clear. He says, the United States military and its accomplices in the Mossad, they have need of hundreds of billions of dollars for their intelligence agencies. He said, you know, they say they were taken by surprise. Don't believe it. Within 10 minutes of the second Twin Tower being hit, CNN announced that Osama bin Laden had done it. I'm in intelligence. This is a planned piece of disinformation by the real perpetrators designed to create an instant mindset to put public opinion in a trance to prevent even intelligent people from thinking for themselves. A sheikh in Arnold de Borsgrave says, so you're convinced that bin Laden did not do it? He said, be serious. He can't break wind without your monitoring it. From a cave inside a mountain, from a peasant's hovel, coordinating intelligence services, military-like operations, stand-downs of your Air Force, attacks that require the ultimate sophistication of the military and intelligence services. He says, are you serious? The elaborate interview by Arnold de Borgrave, I remind you, brothers and sisters, appeared in UPI, mainstream media. The hand of intelligence all over these operations has been enormously covered within mainstream media. The Houston Chronicle, when it conducted its report on the investigation of FinCEN, Financial Services Division, associated with the FBI, of Bush father and son, addressed itself to the funding of the Bush companies, Harkin Energy and Arbusto, by an elaborate financial complex involving the father and brother of Osama bin Laden. This is the funding apparatus of the BCCI, the Bank of Credited Commerce International, which was the laundering device for drug operations and for covert operations across the planet. And it is directly linked to the following. On the 10th of September, brothers and sisters, Dan Rather made an announcement on CBS that in the prior year, $2.4 trillion had been lost by the Pentagon. And in the year antecedent to that, it was $1.2 trillion. And when Robert Lieberman, the accounting officer, testified before Congress, $7.2 trillion without a paper trail. How do you lose that kind of money? This is in offshore accounts and proprietary companies. It's the apparatus through which such operations unfold. It's the murder apparatus of the criminalization of the rulers at the top. Well established. The Wall Street Journal. It is shocking, they say, that the president and his father are entirely involved financially with the bin Ladens, with the financial apparatus of these illicit banks. This is not a mystery. This is not a conspiracy concealed. This is the evidence adumbrated and elaborated in our own established media that reveal and establish the criminalization of this ruling class. So, brothers and sisters, I want to say to you that when we set up the Who Killed Kennedy Committee in London in 1964, it was not out of any illusions or particular affiliation for the Kennedy brothers. Indeed, I should point out to you that at the time of the Berlin crisis in 1961, McNamara, on behalf of the Kennedy brothers, had said that the United States would emerge victorious in a nuclear conflagration. Yes, 160 million Americans would die, 90% of Europe's population, but the U.S. would remain standing. Yeah? And yet, with the execution of Kennedy, we understood that within the class there was this internecine conflict about how to unfold their imperial reach. Let me say to you that in the short time after it was established, much like our own work today, people were coming forward. 19 exhibits of the DA file in Dallas were liberated and sent to us, including Secret Service Report 767, which had in it the Central Intelligence Agency operations number of Lee Harvey Oswald, along with his FBI informant number. When Jim Garrison, the DA in New Orleans, the only public official ever to take on the question of the Kennedy execution and to finger the Central Intelligence Agency for it, established that, the deputy director of the CIA fired by Kennedy, Charles Cabell, had a brother named Earl Cabell, who was the mayor of Dallas, and their daddy was the mayor and sheriff of Dallas, and their granddaddy, the sheriff of Dallas before them, when he established that the offices out of which Lee Harvey Oswald operated were run by E. Howard Hunt of the Central Intelligence Agency, and by Guy Bannister, who was Office of Naval Intelligence. All of that data was made available. Indeed, there were many investigations, brothers and sisters. We had investigations up the wazoo. There was the church committee. I remember Fletcher Prouty, Colonel Fletcher Prouty, whose desk had been the coordination of assassination for the White House and Central Intelligence, who had been assigned to the Antarctic prior to the Kennedy execution. Fletcher hadn't bought in for the removal of the head of state. He came forward before the church committee to give evidence. And he said, you know, I appeared there, and there administering this investigative committee were my former assistants in implementing that assassination program. And they did a buck and wing and a soft shoe to get out of my line of sight. We had investigations, brothers and sisters. You know what they would do when we'd come before them? Where'd you find out that? Who told you this? Where can this document be obtained? What do you think happened to the witnesses? When Jim Garrison indicted David Ferry, he was found dead. Eladio DeVayo came up with a severe case of hatchet in the head. I go into all this simply because I want to make clear here, we are addressing a criminal conspiracy on the part of our rulers that admits to no impediment, and we cannot look to them or their institutions for redress, brothers and sisters. We will be pissing up a rope if we try, I assure you. There have been many struggles, and there have been many crimes. It's a generational thing. It is not the evil which is new, nor is it the crisis that has changed. Each generation confronts the fact that power is concentrated, that it is illicit, that those who have this power are run a system in terminal decay, that they're incapable of meeting the most elementary needs of human beings, that over 1.5 billion people live on less than a dollar a day, that these people with 1% controlling 95% of the national wealth also command 70% of the natural resources on the planet, brothers and sisters. They are addicted to war. Trillions of dollars, $10 trillion in a space of 40 years. That's more than the combined value of everything produced in this society, brothers and sisters, taken together. We will not succeed in reversing this by picking and choosing amongst our oppressors. It's not a question of the evil lesser. We will build a movement together, a movement of the many, that mobilizes our own population, that prepares a political program of challenge. So we will, what will we do? We will take this ruling class and put it in the dustbin of history where it has so long belonged. Thank you very much.
Folks, if you would like to be part of the cause for this 9/11 breakthrough that we're talking about this coming fall, tell everybody you know to listen to Ralph Schoeman's Taking Aim. WBAI, 99.5 FM, 5 to 6 o'clock Tuesdays, his website, takingaim.info.